Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning. I'm Charlie Herman. I'm joined by our regular contributors, Joan Osera with The New York Times and Rana Faruhar with Time Magazine. Well, President Obama says Russia stands alone after its annexation of Crimea in the Ukraine. And to make that point, the president is trying to isolate Vladimir Putin through a series of sanctions against dozens of politicians and business leaders who are close to the Russian leader. Yesterday, Congress passed more legislation that would allow for the White House to implement even additional sanctions against the country and individuals. So focusing on these oligarchs, these people who really make the Russian economy run, what sort of impact will these sanctions have?
Well, they're going to have a lot of impact on the oligarchs themselves. I don't think they're going to have a huge geopolitical impact. The problem is that the sanctions that would be impactful, which are essentially sanctions against exports of oil and gas, would be just as harmful to countries in Europe, and that's why those haven't been instituted. But we're doing what we can in terms of limiting financial flows. I think what will be really interesting to hear more about is where these people have their money. I mean, we know that they've had it in places like Cyprus in the past. Do they have it in New York banks? Where is this money?
Well, a lot of it's moving right now to Singapore. You know, they're not dumb, these oligarchs. And
they'll find a place to put it.
Right.
But not in Russia.
It's important to remember that so far, most of the sanctions have not been aimed at oligarchs, but they've been aimed at politicians and government officials. And it is a little like Vladimir Putin's response, which was to say that John Boehner cannot come to Russia. You know, it's not earth changing.
Darn.
If they were to start to freeze assets of oligarchs, and more importantly, if they were started to put a crimp on business, to say European and American companies couldn't be in the energy business with Russian companies, or they couldn't do banking in Russia, then you start to see something significant, not only because of the sanctions themselves and what they might do, but because the Russian economy is very fragile, it's very dependent on commodities, and it could start to fall apart if you start to take away investment.
But what about this argument that it's trying to create some separation between Putin and these businessmen? And if there's some sort of issue with the way that they're able to move their money around, that they will be unhappy with Putin and they really keep the economy going and that can undermine him.
They owe Putin, period, end of story. And the government allows the oligarchs to do what they want to do. And if they don't like it, as in the case of Mikhail Khodorkovsky, they will take your company away and put you in jail, the Russian government.
I don't think you're going to see oligarchs staging some kind of a revolution. I think what's interesting, frankly, and not just in Russia, but in places like China as well, is how much the rich are moving their money out of these countries and have been for some time, which says a lot about their lack of political stability.
And the lack of belief in the economy
and
there?
And in the sort of geopolitical risk in the future of these regimes.
One of the things Putin is going to want from the oligarchs is shows of loyalty. And he's already told certain oligarchs he wants them to bring some money back to Russia. You know, he wants them to relocate in Russia. He wants them to do things in Russia. And that is his way of fighting back.
So let me ask a really specific question to New York City. A lot of the big real estate sales in the city have been because of Russian billionaires who come in and invest their money and keep the property going. We've got all these huge skyscrapers that are going up on 57th Street, expected Russian billionaires to buy property there. Can this have an effect on New York City's real estate market?
I think it definitely will. You know, I remember when I was buying my house in Brooklyn back in 2007, I was bidding against a German and a Brazilian. You know, I think the fact that the dollar has remained weak relative to other currencies and the fact there's been so much money created, not just in Russia, but in all the emerging markets in the last decade, has made New York and London, of course, a very hot property market.
I don't think it's that going to make that big a difference in the high end of the real estate market. Yes, there are a handful of oligarchs who buy property in London and New York, but you know, as a percentage, it's really pretty small.
Well, let's shift to another wealthy individual who's looking at his empire and its future. That would be the 83-year-old Rupert Murdoch. He leads News Corp, which owns the Wall Street Journal and Dow Jones. He also heads up 21st Century Fox, and he just named his sons to senior positions within the company, all but ensuring their eventual succession. He's basically taking these publicly traded companies and kind of making it his own personal inheritance to his kids. How unusual is this?
It's not very unusual. You know, about a third of the Fortune 500 companies, publicly traded companies, are family owned. What is unusual is that the Murdoch family controls the high level positions in this firm. I mean, most family owned companies are professionally managed companies like Walmart, Cargill, others that you can think of. I think that this idea of really creating an empire is what's unusual.
Well, you know, think about what Rupert Murdoch's been doing here. He has one son, James, who is basically in disgrace because of the phone hacking scandal and didn't exactly get ousted, but got pushed to the side. He has another son, Lachlan, who's older, who was so annoyed with the way he was treated the last time he was at the company, where he had a high-level position, that he basically quit, went to Australia, and spent 9 years as an entrepreneur. And Rupert spent the last 9 years trying to get him back, trying to get him back, trying to get him back. What is unusual is to see this 83-year-old patriarch taking his two children and basically putting them in one is going to be a non-executive co-chairman, whatever that means, and the other is going to be a co-chief operating officer of one of the big companies. And he's just going to basically say, these are my children, they're going to inherit my company, and I don't really care that it's owned by shareholders. This is the way we're going to do it.
What does that say about Rupert Murdoch, the man, and the way that he's run the company?
Well, it says two things. He's made an awful lot of money for an awful lot of people over the years, which is why he can get away with this. And the second thing is he's Rupert Murdoch, and that's why he can get away with this.
Well, let's look at something maybe a little bit more immediate, and that's what's coming up in the weeks ahead. Rana, what are you paying attention to?
So I am paying attention to the movie Divergent, the teen dystopian flick, which my daughter is insisting we go to see this weekend. And what I'm wondering is if this actually signals the end of this trend of
young adult,
dystopian female hero action films. It's interesting because the opening weekend last weekend was $65 million at the box office. Hunger Games marked the peak of this trend. Back in 2012, it was $150 million opening weekend. So we may see this trend trailing off.
Joe?
Well, I'm watching those inspiring Northwestern University football players who went to the National Labor Relations Board, asked to be able to form a union, and just the other day, the NLRB said, yes, they're employees and they can form a union. This will be a battle that we will be watching for months to come. This will be appealed and then reappealed and then reappealed. But if it were to happen and football teams could become unionized, it's a real game changer.
Well, we'll be watching those stories and all the week's financial news at WNYC.org. You can also take this program with you as a podcast available on iTunes. Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine and Joe Nocera with The New York Times. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.